Blog Talk Radio.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and GC Rock Show. This is a show where we try to think for ourselves and offer thought-provoking, stimulating, informative, and entertaining discussion. Welcome.
Well, welcome, 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 welcome. Got Dave right here at the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. Welcome. This is, we got a great, great show. This is Airwaves America, as you just heard, Renaissance Radio with Dave and G-Ski Rocks. G-Ski is not with us right now, or probably won't be here at all tonight. Some family coming in from out of town, they're going out to eat. So, but in the meantime, anybody wants to call in number is 516-387-1705. And that's where we can get down with the get down, as G-Ski Rocks is fond of saying. The show tonight is going to be a mixture of a bunch of different things. There's some hot items, and then there's some other things that I like to always usually hit. As it happens, last time I was on, my microphone cut out while I was reading some of my major planned on content. And Sue from New Mexico was having a chat with Mike from Minneapolis. And until I got back on, I was gone for about 10 or 15 minutes, and I was just reading away. I figured, you know, everything was good. I didn't realize that I had been booted until in my headphones, Blog Talk Radio says, goodbye, and close it out. And I said... And even then, I thought, oh, I guess they just now booted me. I'll try and log back in. When I logged back in, when they booted me, I had just opened two microphones, Sue and Mike, and they were chatting amongst themselves. So when I came back in, I didn't know all this until I listened to the show on the podcast later on, and it was actually kind of funny. But it was literally, I was reading Saul Alinsky's Rules of Means and Ends, which I'm definitely going to get to today. And, we'll see if they boot me off again. Technically, I don't even know if I'm broadcasting now. I hope I am. I don't have anybody online that can let me know. If you want to get in touch with G-Ski Rocks, you can email him at gskirocks@airwavesamerica.com, which is kind of cool. If you want to get in touch with me, I'm Dave Graham or Dave Graham Live on Facebook. That's probably the fastest way to get in touch with me. Because I don't use Twitter anymore, and the email that's dave@airwavesamerica.com, I have not ever been able to access. There might be a million emails there for me. I doubt it. But it's something with the password or something, and G-Ski and I just haven't put our heads together long enough to figure out how to get me into that. That's all it takes. Just to talk through it, but it's been a lower priority. We have a great, great show for you. And I know you know what that means. It means that I have faith that it's going to be a good, good, great, great show, because I you never know. You never know how it's going to go. So what do we got now? We have, I was thinking that if there were ever an impeachable offense, a phone call would do, don't you think? They made up and twisted and leaked and did all that with Trump, with his phone call, saying, oh, it was a quid pro quo. Well, if ever there was a focus group phrase, quid pro quo was the one. So now we have, and everybody knows, by the way, that it was actually Joe Biden, before he was president, or as vice president, that actually did the quid pro quo, not a phone call, but it was in person with the Ukraine president. I need that prosecutor fired. If not, you're not going to get that $500 million. Well, son of a bitch, you know, I'm leaving here in 6 hours and he better be fired or you're not going to get the $500 million or the whatever it was, or the billion. I mean, that is clearly something for something. Why did he want him fired? Well, it's because the guy was corrupt. Really? I think it was more that that was the one guy that was investigating his smartest person he's ever met, son. Hey, yo, we got Bigfoot in the house. So I think I'm broadcasting, so that's good. That's good. Now I got some feedback. What's up? Thanks for coming in. So now the phone call that should be used for impeachment, in my eyes, is with the Afghanistan president. King the Afghan president before the pullout. I'm trying to think, was it back in April or was it in June? Might have been June. Before the pullout, in any case. Asking him to represent the situation to reflect the perception that the Taliban was not as strong as they are and that his military, the Afghan military, was stronger than they are. And the key phrase is whether it's true or not. Whether it's true or not. That's what he was asking him to do. Why is that not the biggest story? I mean, that's a rhetorical question. Why is that not? How can people not look at that? How can people not see that if somebody asks somebody to say something and then adds the phrase, whether it's true or not, in that? And, you know, all the while dangling military aid on contingent on if he was successful in, you know, altering the perception and the narrative. And by the way, those are the words that they use. Perception, narrative. Well, I mean, why not go with the truth and reality? Why not go with the way it is, not the way you want it to be? Concept right there is a fundamental Saul Alinsky concept where you try not to see the world as it is. You see the world as it should be. Okay, well, all right, Mr. Alinsky, that's kind of a subjective term, and we know what you want. Oh, look at that. We got Suzette coming in the house. What's going on, Susie? Great to have you. Maybe later on, Suzette, I would like to talk with you about your Newsom recall election. There's some things there that I didn't understand. So not right now, but maybe later on, if you wouldn't mind. There were some things that I didn't understand to be the case, but are now the case. From what I've heard in the news and stuff like that. So those didn't understand it. But anyways, back to my thank you. And back to my my topic, which was the impeachable phone call. And the key phrase that was used of, I don't have it in front of me. I probably should, but I don't. We don't do show prep here, but it's the phrase, whether it's true or not. That is a huge red flag. So you're using the words narrative. You need to switch the narrative to create the perception that the Taliban is not as strong as it is and not doing as well as they are, and that at the same time your military is stronger than it is and doing better than they are. Whether it's true or not, you need to create the perception to change the narrative. Believable. That, I mean, I just don't see how people can just gloss over that or explain that away. They're not explaining it. They're avoiding it. And there's nothing to see there. Let's talk about Texas abortion law, or let's talk about climate change. But that's how they're handling that. But and no one is pressing them on it. That's the biggest problem. No one's pressing them on it at the White House, and they need to be pressed on it. So. Yeah, so that's probably the biggest bombshell I heard this week was, there's a phone call. There's a clear corruption discussion in the phone call, and it was I mean, how much more can we take, I guess? There, I'm looking for a piece here. All right, so it looks like it's going to be time for me to hit some of my think for yourself stuff. I had to use some of this stuff today with our buddy at work, who is the main foil that I use. That's somebody that was asking me about Joe Biden, who is busting the Texas law, the abortion law, because they want abortion on demand, by taxpayer funded and all that. Partial birth, whatever. They want that nationalized, and the point was that they are using the my body, my choice argument with, and then when you juxtapose that with, but I want everybody to have this vaccine. Let me be perfectly, we have to reimagine. Yeah, that sounds like a Biden statement. Let me be perfectly, we have to reimagine. Suzette, thank you. Dynamite drop in. So I was being asked a question specifically. Hey, Dave, what do you think of that? And to which I replied, the whole my body, my choice doesn't hold any water with me, because technically that's somebody else's body that you're going to be doing away with. So our buddy speaks up and says, okay, all right, can we skip over this part? And that way I don't have to get upset. And, you know, the other person was like, excuse me, no one was really, first of all, talking to you. It's called the Heartbeat Act. Yes. Yes, which is, in other words, abortion is outlawed as soon as a heartbeat is detected. And that's fantastic. But he was like, well, let's skip over to the part while, you know, I have to get all upset. And then it was like, oh, no one was talking to you. We were just, why can't we have a discussion amongst ourselves? And, you know, he always shuts everything right down. Well, he was the guy that comes in and, you know, he threw a hissy fit. He'll go and tattle on people that are talking politics. But it's okay if he talks politics, right? And then so probably starting tomorrow, no one's going to be able to say anything to anybody, you know. So it's like, you know, what the – grow up, you know. Here's what I decided. Anything I added right then and there was not going to make anything any better. So I was like, all right, we'll lay off of that. He's, you know, easily upset, you know, and it's going to, I don't want to create a whole bunch of drama in the office if I don't have to. I have to work there too, you know. I just don't like the drama. So when he was out loading his truck, I walked over and I said, hey, can I try something? Because I don't want to upset you. I tried to be very diplomatic. And I said, you have been conditioned to get upset upon hearing something with which you disagree, when all you really have to do is disagree. And he's like, well, you know, it's, you know, I can't say. And he really didn't have an answer. And I said, that's why we're not supposed to talk politics, he says. You know, that's why, you know, we're a government entity. We shouldn't be criticizing our government. I said, we're a bunch of people. We're people. We pay taxes. It's not, we don't have any allegiance because of where we work. I mean, our allegiance is to the flag. You know, and he, you know, he was like, still, yeah, you know, we shouldn't be talking about. I said, wait a minute. I said, you've talked politics in the office. I have. Yes, I have. I shouldn't, but I have. I said, and what did nobody shut you down? And, you know, he was trying to think of, well, yes, they do. I said, wait a minute. No. Nobody tells you that you can't say what it is you want to say. We will engage your point, and we will debate. But that's a distinction. I said that's a distinction with a difference. We're not shutting you down. We're engaging your point to actually make you think about it a little bit. Well, no, I think we're going to have to agree to disagree. I said, wait a minute. That's a question. Has anybody told you you can't say things that you want to say? And he was like, no, I guess not. And I said, I further said, if the discussion was something with which you agreed, you would be totally fine with it, you know? And yeah, I probably would, yeah. And so, you know, I gave him something to think about, and hopefully, you know, he will start thinking for himself. The discussion after he left was, you know, I went in and you know, I mentioned to the person that he shut down, who was really at that point pissed off. You know, and kind of mad that I didn't back him up, but I was like, look, there's nothing I would have said that would have made any difference other than, you know, maybe making you feel better. Here's what I just said. Here's what I just went out and said to him. So I mentioned that. And one of the things that I realized is he's not upset at the opposing viewpoint. He's upset that there is an opposing viewpoint, because when and I think that that's what he gets that's what he gets upset about, is because when we start putting out some good points, he can't defend his belief, his quote unquote progressive values, which, again, I've said many times, that's an oxymoron, because there's really no value in progressivism. I may have to take a break and play some promos and mute my mic, because the dog sees mommy coming home, and it might get loud in here. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. So anyways, so that's my latest addition to the Think for Yourself series, is that you are conditioned to be upset. And I chose my words very carefully in that sense, because it is a conditioning thing. You're conditioned to be upset with something that you disagreed with. So, in other words, 10, 15, maybe even 20 years ago, people could disagree without being upset with each other. It happened all the time. Actually, we still do it, some of us. But the conditioning and the societal Marxism that has been injected and really, really been poured on in the last probably 8 years, it's really gotten, and it's really come to like a fever pitch right now. It is serious. Like, it is so shrill right now that it's like nobody is allowed to say anything. Well, I mean, we're still people, and we're still going to talk, and we're still going to, disagree and debate. And the one time I did shut him down was when he kept accusing me or us of whenever there was an opposing viewpoint, you guys got to stop listening to Fox News. I was like, all right, that is it. That's enough. Because that's not something that's a real thing. That's something that you want to be true. And it's something that you use to justify why you hate what it is you hate. So anyways, Let me just see if they need any help, all right? Because I'm kind of by myself right now. And I'm going to play a quick little promo, and I'll be right back at you as soon as I check in. All right? Be right back.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet? Yeah, tell me, mama, are we there yet?
We can create a million new manufacturing jobs in the next 4 years. If you believe in a country where everyone gets a fair shot and everyone does their fair share and everyone plays by the same rules, yes, our road is longer, but we travel it together.
Imagine the breakthroughs that are on the horizon and just beyond it.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
America, I never said this journey would be easy, and I won't promise that now.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Yes, our path is harder, but it leads to a better place.
Mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Not yet.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
It's literally around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which hunger is vanquished by crops that don't depend on the soil, water, or fertilizer, or pesticides to thrive.
Are we there yet?
They're just around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which nations no longer depend on nuclear weapons for their defense.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
I love life. I love life because there's a challenge and something new every day. I was told when I was getting married that I had this kidney disease and my three sisters had it and two of my brothers had it as well. It slows the kidneys down till they stop working. I tell myself that this can be rough and hard, but you can live and you can be happy. I go to dialysis three times a week. I spend 4 hours in the center. It's good to go to dialysis and see somebody care about you. I'm a social worker by profession. I like being around people. It is important to listen to your technicians and your doctors, your nephrologists and dietitians. If you don't talk to them, they don't know you feeling bad or feeling sick. By working together, you'll feel better. I got my husband, I got my family, I got my job. I visit different places doing health and wellness like hospitals, dialysis centers, clinics, and do workshops concerning prevention for kidney failure. Dialysis affects people in different ways. Find out how it affects you so you can be able to beat it to the punch so you'll be able to be active and do things that you want to do. Be educated about what's going on with you and your body. I try to enjoy life more than what I have before. I have kidney failure, and I'm living well.
All right, welcome back. They had stepped out to do some laundry. I thought I might have to bring in the big basket, but they already had that in, so I plugged in a few other things. So anyways, thanks for bearing with me. This is how it goes. We live lives. We have families, and we do what we can. So we'll so be it. That's all I got to say. So anyways, let me go back to the Think for Yourself series. And just hit a couple of these that I think, I mean, I hit different ones each time and I add to it. Today I added you've been conditioned to get upset when you hear something that you disagree with, and all you have to do is disagree with it. I didn't think of it at the time when I was talking with him, but I did shut him down one time when he was. It's just I'm sick of people accusing me, being accusatory that I watch Fox News. Not that there's anything wrong or right or with anybody that does. I just don't, and it is not impossible for me to formulate an idea, an opinion, or a concept on my own. I use my brain. I see what I see. I hear what I hear. I compare it with what I know, you know, how things are going. I plug in, well, how much of this is Marxism? How much of this is constitutionalism? You know, and you can arrive at the same place as somebody else without using talking points between each other. But the people that live and die on talking points and memes, they can't even conceive of that. That's a concept with which they are just totally unfamiliar. One guy was asking me one time, where do you get your information if it's such a super secret thing? I said, I use original source documents. He says, so I tried to look up original source documents and I didn't find anything. Oh, okay. I guess that only makes you a moron, you know? So, if you... just wondering, let's talk about people will believe what they want to believe. And part of the problem I have is, why do they want to believe America sucks? Why do they want to believe that? I don't get it. Yeah, that's exactly right, Suzette. Saying a person watches Fox News, that's their go-to. As if that's an argument. Not really an argument. Why don't you, instead of saying, okay, that just comes from Fox News, Fox News had a good point, let's just say. What about the point that I made that you assumed was from Fox News? Argue the point, not the source. By the way, I was the source. My own feelings, my own heart, my own head. I was the source. So, that's right. That's the other thing. Oh, before I go back to this, there's another guy that I'm friends with. He's a UPS driver. But we're buddies. You know, we're buddies. We get along. We always tell jokes. You know, we have different things. I see something funny, I'll send it to him, vice versa. He is total Democrat, Trump hater, right? And we would get into it, and, you know, he never accused me of Fox News or anything, but he just totally disbelieved anything I said. No, I don't believe that that's true. So it was like, oh, okay. We can go far with this conversation. But so... I wasn't there. I'm going to have to ask him about this. Apparently, he came in and... Because UPS comes in and drops off things to the post office because we're going to every house every day anyways. They drop off a bunch of stuff that, you know, we get paid to deliver. We wouldn't have to deliver it if they didn't drop it off, but that means we would get paid less in the long run, you know. So it's a deal that worked out. So he comes in and he drops things off. Sometimes when he's there, you know, he'll engage some people, if, you know, whoever. And I think it was a few weeks ago. It was at the time of the, you know, all the kneeling and whatnot in the Olympics. His position basically is, and like I said, this is secondhand. His position is that the flag is kind of overrated. And the, you know, it's been used, too much lately. It's been, you know, people wrap themselves in the flags or they kneel or they don't kneel or they get mad at the ones who do kneel and all that. It's just a flag. It's a piece of cloth, blah, blah, blah. Well, first of all, screw you. You never served on it. You have no idea what's behind that flag. And let me see here. So let me ask three questions. First question one. How long has that been your belief? Doesn't matter what the answer is. Question two, how did you develop that opinion? Question three, have you ever paid any cost in any way to hold that opinion and then make them pay? And I'm prepared to do this because someone's got to push back. They're running around with these attitudes for free. No one pays anything. So don't ever talk to me again. Don't even ever look at me again. You're dead to me. If you wave at me on the street, I'll probably flip you off. It might be a price you're willing to pay, but I'm going to make you pay it. And no, I am not joking. So that was an idea that I had to try and push back against the Marxism that people deny is Marxism. What do you guys who said? Well, because they are told to believe, why do people want to hate America? They are told to believe America is an imperialist, racist country. However, when asked to explain specifically, the playbook says to reply, look it up if you don't know, which is another way to shut down argument. Very well said, Suzette. Very well said. But it's not imperialist. It's not racist. Yeah. It's just the Marxism thing. That's what they do. Anyways, that's an idea that I had to make people pay. Even if I like them and just hit them out of the blue with that. We're done. If you want to change your mind, if you want to work your way back around to, you know, liking the flag, liking the country, we can be friends again. But if that's your position, we're done. Not going to look at you. We're not going to swap humorous stories. Not going to wave at you on the street. And again, you know, it might be something that many of them are willing to pay. But I mean, it's not going to work if somebody doesn't like you to begin with. I mean, it's somebody that you have rapport with. It's the only way that works. So that was thank you for answering that other question. People will believe what they want to believe. Why do they want to believe America sucks? All right. Next one is, the next one is, what level of government would you be comfortable with? That's a good question. And whatever they say, okay, well, I want to have housing provided. I want to have food provided. I want to have, you know, free health care. I want to have, you know, whatever the level of government is that they will accept. I mean, obviously, it will inevitably exceed that. The question is, so then you'll stand up and oppose what goes beyond what you're comfortable with? Or more likely, you'll allow yourself to be convinced that it's good and that everybody should like it. Now, hopefully, I mean, these are ideas to stimulate some thinking for one's self. Here's one. Would socialism, which you agree with, Would socialism make you richer? It would make rich people poorer. What does that have to do with you? Other than, you know, the whole Schadenfreude concept of, you know, taking delight in another's misfortune. The jealousy, covetous, you know, that whole seventh deadly sin type of thing. All of the negative emotions and whatnot. So, in that vein, would also have to agree that people who are really, really smart, they should be held back so as not to make full use of their faculties for equity purposes, because everybody can't keep up. Everybody can't keep up, so we need to hold the faster racehorses back. We need to hold those guys back so that everybody can cross the finish line at the same time, which brings everything down to the slowest racehorse. I don't know. The racehorse thing just came to me, so... it never worked because it wasn't implemented the right way. Yes, Suzette, I do know that. Thank you. I have used that. Oops, it looks like there's a... Are you leaving? Okay. All right. Get out of here. You're panting too loud. I have beautiful doggies, but they're too loud. So that's a concept I really haven't had any anybody push back on, because to make everybody equal, what do you do with the really smart people? What do you do with the really strong people? What do you do with the really fast people? Are you supposed to not use your faculties for your full life? I mean, the incentives to achieve are erased. The incentive to not achieve is amplified. The less money you make, the more assistance you'll get. The more money you make, the more we're going to take to pay those people who don't make as much. Everything boils down to that lowest common denominator. Let me, that's right. I remember now. Where was that one? And... I had it in one of my books. It was great, and I found a note from my son who went through the book and added his own little drop-ins, which was kind of cool. An anecdote. I found all this is it. Good. I don't know if this really happened, but it kind of illustrates beautifully the point. An economics professor at Texas Tech said he had never failed a single student, but had once failed an entire class. The class, in other words, the students, insisted that socialism worked, since no one would be poor and no one would be rich. It's a great equalizer. The professor then said, okay, we'll have an experiment in this class on socialism. All grades will be averaged and everyone will receive the same grade, so no one will fail and no one will receive an A. After the first test, the grades were averaged and everyone got a B. The students who had studied hard were upset. while the students who had studied very little were happy. I mean, that's kind of obvious. But as the second test rolled around, the students who had studied little studied even less. And the ones who had studied hard decided that since they couldn't make an A, they also studied less. The second test average was a D. No one was happy. When the third test rolled around, the average grade was F. The scores never increased, as bickering, blame, name-calling all resulted in hard feelings, and no one would study for anyone else. To their great surprise, all failed. The professor told them that socialism would ultimately fail because the harder people try to succeed, the greater their reward. In other words, capitalism. But when a government takes all the reward away, socialism, no one will try or succeed. Well, that's exactly what happens. That's exactly how it works. If there's no point to study hard, because you're not going to get an A, because the other people can't keep up, what's your incentive to study? There's a human nature thing. Right? So if you don't get any reward, you're not gonna push for it. If you're not gonna get any not punishment, but if you're not going to get any consequence if you don't study, then why bother to study? Yes, it was a great lesson, but like I said, I couldn't verify it. It's something I found on the web. I put it in a book. I put it in Stay Mad, and if Susie was here, she might have recognized that little story because I know she bought that book. I just don't see her on the line. She might be here. She might be listening on online, but she's not on the phone line. So, but like I said, that's not something that I can, you know, I cited it as an anecdote. It may have happened. It may not have happened. But it's certainly believable. So that's my, you know, so that's where I kind of got this, you know, this argument of if the really smart people through government are held back for equity purposes because everybody else can't keep up. I mean, who's going to be the ones to invent? Who's going to be the people to, you know, do R&D to develop, you know, medicines or cures? Who's going to be the ones who come up with the newest jet engine? Who's going to be the ones to come up with, you know, there's going to be nobody to do that. And everyone's going to be a slave to government. I mean, I don't see the appeal on running a government in which there's no growth of your society. But I'm not a commie filth either. So progressives who hate this country, even though they won't admit it, they cite past horrors and evils of the government. Trail of Tears, the wars, whatever, slavery, all of those things. But they have a full faith in the current government. When I came up with that one, I think I laughed for a little while. What do you got, Suzette? Socialist wannabes think that they can take over a company and run it with everyone being equal. It will not work for the very reason the professor had taught. That's right. That's exactly right. Didn't they do that? I think Obama, that rings a bell though. He did something with one of those one of those big car companies or something, and he somehow got the management to sell it to the union or something like that. I don't know how it. I don't remember exactly how it was. It was a while ago, back when they had all that. What was it? The cars for cash or something like that. Anyway, you know, that's some of my that's some of my stuff that I've been noodling through the past few weeks, and hopefully it makes you think, so that we can present thinking points, not talking points, but thinking points. That's, I just made that one up. That's pretty good. I think I'm going to write that down. Thinking points, not talking points, but thinking points, with people that we come across, you know, here and there that that have opposing view. Sharing works, just not equal work and pay. Right. There's so many nuances within that equal pay for equal work thing, that it never works. You're right, Suzette. It's not going to ever work. It was never designed to work. It's nothing that should work. You know, I mean, morality, and it would dictate that if somebody has studied harder at something and has more knowledge in a field than somebody else, and just because they happen to be doing the same job, well, I think one of them is done with a little more with a little more production, with a little more efficiency and that sort of thing. Well, that should be rewarded. It should be, you know, according to your education, stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I think we're in agreement. I played some stuff. I might want to hit some of these TikToks that I have. Let's see here. Hold on a second. Let's call that up. I don't want to. Had some very poignant ones. Yeah, let's just see. Oh, so I have here's a Joe Biden, and he's talking about he's tripping over his words. Let's see if we can catch it.
U.S. troops died in Iraq and Afghanistan. 6,927. Not over 6,000.
Catch that? No? Yes? No? Yes? 6,927 troops died in Iraq and Afghanistan. Not over 6,000. Sorry, Joe. 927 over 6,000.
You don't even know how government works.
What is the government?
Government, us, the people.
No, that's not the government. The government is a contract.
Oh, ding,
written
ding, ding.
By the co-founders of this country, and it's called the Constitution of America. Is that democracy?
Oh, right? You're lost.
Wait, where are you going? What is that? Is this country supposed to be democratic?
You don't even know how.
So here's a guy. He's a black guy. He has a Trump hat on, and he's videoing himself. People would come up to him, and he would start videoing and stuff like that, and they would ask him. He's actually pretty smart. I happened to save it. I didn't mean to actually play that one next, but it kind of just ran. So, anyways, Joe Biden, not over 6,000.
Yes, over 6,000.
All right, shoot. So listen, I'm going to do a top of the hour break. I hope you stick around. I am going to get through the Saul Alinsky Rules of Means and Ends tonight. I went through a bunch of them last time I was on to find out that I had been booted. And Sue from New Mexico was having a chat with Mike from Minneapolis after I opened their both of their microphones. I got booted. I didn't know I got booted. I was reading and I was talking about it. I was making great points. It was the best show ever. I just wasn't broadcasting. It was like 10 minutes later, I hear Blog Talk Radio say, goodbye. And I said, well, shit. So when I dialed back in, those two were talking, and I found out after when I listened to the podcast that I was gone for about probably 7 minutes, maybe longer, maybe 10. And I didn't know how much of the rules of means and ends that I had done had actually even broadcast. It turns out none of them. thanks to Sue, who kind of just stepped right up. She found that her microphone was open. Mike found his microphone was open, and he's like, hello? Hello? She says, hello? And he's like, oh, are you like a co-host? She goes, no, I just happened. I promote their show, and I was on the line, and her mic was open, so... She says, but I don't know what happened to Dave, but I can talk with you until he gets back. Go ahead with your call. I thought it was awesome. I listened to part of that show again today. It was great. Just to kind of get me back in the mood of all that. So I'm going to do a top of the hour breaky poo, and I will be right back. When I come back, I'm going to be hitting these rules of means and ends, and then thanks goodness for Sue, for sure. Maybe I can have a chat with Suzette about her recall election going on out there, maybe about 8:30-ish, if that's all right, if that's convenient. Because I just want to get through these other things, they're amazing. This stuff that he wrote in the book, Rules for Radicals, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's believable, but it's... Anyway. Dave and G-Ski Show, this is Dave. G-Ski's out. We'll be right... we'll be back, top of the hour.
Good evening.
Well, I used to eat bacon, 'cause I like the way it tastes. Now I eat it for jihadis, just to say in your face,
I kill you.
I eat bacon, wrapped in bacon, rolled in bacon bits.
Join several songs.
You see what I'm trying to say, Abdul? I'd rather you got over yourself, put an end to all this righteous indignation. Have some bacon and enjoy it. We can all get along, and from war enjoy permanent vacation.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
When we do internet talk radio, we receive support from a great many areas. We have listener support, of course, and some who help with the promoting. One group that often goes unrecognized are the wives of internet talk radio hosts. They are the ones who tolerate our dalliances and the time we invest in our hobbies. Well, this is one way we can properly recognize those who are closest to us by broadcasting their sincere sentiments regarding our passions.
Are you going to stay up all night? You have family, you know. You're always at that computer. How much money do you make doing that radio show? You're not the only one who lives there, you know. You better come and eat. I'm not bringing it in there.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and GC Rock Show. This is a show where we try to think for ourselves and offer thought-provoking, stimulating, informative, and entertaining discussion. Welcome.
Indeed, welcome, welcome, welcome back. This is Dave from the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. He's paying for the Blog Talk account. I don't know why I get top billing. He's just that kind of a guy, I guess, you know. It's the G-Ski and Dave show, from my point of view. In any case, if you want to give us a call, 516-387-1705. I got a couple of things I want to get to, and then hopefully around the bottom of the hour we'll be chatting with Suzette from California. So I took a couple of articles, headlines that I was, you know, thinking about delving into today. But I'll just run the headlines. There's a Breitbart.com headline. It says Hans von Spakovsky. Missing ballots in three states exceed Joe Biden's victory margins. So when I was looking at that, what they're talking about, I was reading that this morning, and I'm trying to get a sense of it. They bulk mailed out all the mail-in ballots, but inevitably there's, you know, thousands that are old addresses, vacant places, you know, things like that. So they get returned. Those apparently haven't been returned. They're just missing. But they were mailed out to, you know, bad addresses in one way or the other. And the missing ballots in three states now exceeds the margin that Joe Biden won by. Nothing to see here, right? No problem. I'm sure there's a logical explanation for that. You know, oh yes, you saw that on Fox News. That's probably the only argument. Oh yeah, Fox News opinion. All right. Next one is, and this is horrifying. I absolutely, to me, this is the pinnacle of partisan corruption. Here's a headline, Yahoo News, yahoo.com. Mitch McConnell says impeachment of Biden is not going to happen. Mitch McConnell. Well, there's a fighter for the Republicans. There's a fighter. Douchebag is what he is. He reaches into all these other Senate elections in all the other states. He's a senator from Kentucky. He's a senator from Kentucky. And he's reaching in with hundreds of thousands of dollars to all these other states to support someone who will support him. That's the ticket. That's the game. Excuse me. Who the hell are you to decide, you know, who's going to run and who's going to be chosen and who's going to be voted in other states other than Kentucky? And for you to then say, no, now that you've clawed and scratched and scraped your way to the top, oh, we're not going to impeach him because of that phone call. It's not on the table. People should hold them accountable at the ballot box. Well, not for nothing, Donald Trump got impeached for nothing twice. They didn't say that. The Republicans are just flaccid. The Republicans don't fight. They don't know how to fight. They don't know how to fight the fight that is being brought to them. They just lay down. They're doing Tai Chi while the Democrats are doing MMA. Oh, well, okay. No, wait. I got a better one. They're doing dance classes, and the Democrats are doing MMA, and they think they're competing. We're competing for the hearts and minds of the American people, and we think that they will be attracted to our dance routines, and we think that they'll be repulsed by the Democrats' aggressive MMA war tactics. No, I don't think so. What's the next one? Townhall.com. Rebecca Downs wrote, Mitch McConnell has weighed in on whether to impeach Joe Biden. Well, that's the same answer. Here we go. What's his name? McCarthy? What's his first name? His first name might be Mitch. Mitch, there's a Mitch McCarthy, the minority leader in the House. Mitch, you know, call him Mitch McCarthy. whatever his first name is, Kevin. His name henceforth is Mitch. He's really not interested in any way in impeachment. I said to, I think, when I finally got back in with Mike from Minneapolis, I said that if Republicans in the 2022 election, Republicans, if they run on impeachment, I think they'll win. But now that the leaders of both the Senate and the House have expressed like negative interest into impeaching Biden, I said, I don't know, what are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? That the media will say, oh, you're only doing it as a get even thing. Oh, you're only doing it for partisan reasons. You, Republicans pounce. Republicans pounce. They're going to say that anyways. The hell with them. So that's disturbing to me. That, and I wanted to make sure I brought that up. G-Ski was going to send me some stuff that he wanted to talk about after realizing that he wasn't going to be able to be here, but he never did. So I don't know if I covered some of what he was wanted to talk about. He wanted to talk about some Biden stuff, but maybe next week he'll be back. I have, just so you guys know, a little housekeeping. I got a gig not next week, but the week after. So I should be around. Maybe he'll be around. Maybe we'll have a real show next week instead of a ragtag, you know, one person show. Anyways, let me get to my Saul Alinsky content that I wanted to bring in. I've read you the rules for radicals. Number one, power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. Okay, good. Number two, never go outside the expertise of your people. And then they go on to say, when an action or tactic is outside the experience of the people, the result is confusion, fear, and retreat, and the collapse of communication. Number three, these are the actual rules for radicals. Number three, whenever possible, do go outside the expertise of the enemy. Look for ways to increase insecurity, anxiety, and uncertainty. This happens all the time. Watch how many organizations under attack are blindsided by seemingly irrelevant arguments that they are then forced to address. These are tactics that you see every day. Number four. Make the enemy live up to its own book of rules. And then they go on to say, you can kill them with this, for they can no more obey their rules than the Christian church can live up to Christianity. Let's see here. What happened here? I don't know why that blocked out. Number four, make the enemy. Number five, what's going on with that? Ridicule is man's most potent weapon. They go on to say it is almost impossible to counteract ridicule. Also, it infuriates the opposition, which then reacts to your advantage. Number six, a good tactic is one your people enjoy. Number seven, a tactic that drags on too long becomes a drag. They go on to say, man can sustain militant interest in any issue for only a limited time. Number eight, keep the pressure on with different tactics and actions and utilize all events of the period for your purpose. It is so unbelievable how word for word we have seen all these things in the last 6 years. I'm just going to read that one again. Keep the pressure on with different tactics and actions and utilize all the events of the period for your purpose. So Saul Alinsky, in writing this, knows that there will always be something going on that can be utilized and injected into this number eight, keep the pressure on. Number nine, the threat is usually more terrifying than the thing itself. How many big companies have caved in to boycotts or bad press and things like that? Number 10, the major premise for tactics is the development of operations that will maintain a constant pressure upon the opposition. Goes on to say, it is this unceasing pressure that results in the reaction from the opposition that are essential for the success of the campaign. So in other words, they're just waiting. They're doing stuff to make you react. Then they can say, look, see how they're reacting. All right, number 11. This is kind of what you see every day. If you push a negative hard and deep enough, it will break through into its counterside. In other words, every positive has its negative. The price of a successful attack is a constructive alternative. And number 13, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. In conflict tactics, there are certain rules that should be regarded as universalities. One is that the opposition must be singled out as the target and frozen. It goes on to say, any target can always say, why do you center on me when there are others to blame as well? When you freeze the target, you disregard these rational but distracting arguments. Then, as you zero in and freeze your target and carry out your attack, all the others will come out of the woodwork very soon. They become visible by their support of the target. And then he writes this in there as well. One acts decisively only in the conviction that all the angels are on one side and all the devils on the other. During a one I have my other microphone on and PA on, and her bark is echoing through the anyways, so Suzette drops in with, during a one-on-one argument, their voices will get louder to drown you out. They continue to yell until you give up. Yeah, that's kind of how that one goes. One of the major points that you can see is this last sentence where it says, one acts decisively only in the conviction that all the angels are on one side and all the devils are on the other. This is, in my mind now, the conditioning that people are programmed now to get upset when they hear something with which they disagree, when all they have to do is disagree. Suzette says that's the pressure Alinsky is talking about. Yeah, when they raise your voice and they shout you down, yeah. You see that all over the place. So now I want to hit these rules of means and ends, which I tried to do last time I was on, but apparently I had been booted. It's from the Handbook of the Left, Rules for Radicals, Chapter 2, Rules of Means and Ends. Now, some of these are just observations, and some of them are opinions. For instance, this is kind of hard to argue with when they say, number one, one's concerns with the ethics of means and ends varies inversely with one's personal interest in the issue. So in other words, The stronger you feel about an issue, the less you're going to concern yourself with the ethics of your means. One's, and then it goes on to say, one's concerns with the ethics of means and ends varies inversely with one's distance from the scene of the conflict. Again, the closer you are to it, the less concern you have with the ethics of your means that you're using. So as one's personal interest in an issue rises, the less concern with the ethics involved. In addition, if you're closer to the scene, the lower the concern of ethics involved. So to me, ethics should be a constant. I don't know why it wouldn't be. Number two, the judgment, this is going to blow you away, this one right here. The judgment of the ethics, in other words, whether you had good ethics or bad ethics, of a means is dependent on the political position of those sitting in judgment. Read it again, and then I'll read what I wrote about it. The judgment of the ethics of means is dependent political position of those sitting in judgment. You get it that time? According to Alinsky, two people can accomplish the same end using the same means, but if their political positions are opposite, judgment is passed on the one who is not on your side. How many times? You know, if Biden wanted to build a wall, that's great. Trump wants to build a wall, that's horrible. That's a classic double standard. That right there, that rule, that's only the second rule. You get to judge the ethics of means based on if somebody's a Republican or a Democrat, basically. All right, so number three, in war, the end justifies almost any means. Okay, not really. It's funny how he mentions in war because he's writing a war thing. All right, okay, here we go. Judgment must be made in the context of the times in which the action occurred and not from any other chronological vantage point. Number four, I'm going to read it again. Judgment must be made in the context of the times in which the action occurred and not from any other chronological vantage point. So no one may pass judgment on Bill Ayers for blowing up a police station back in the 60s because apparently back then it needed to be done. Today, he's a retired professor from the University of Illinois at Chicago. Judgment must be made in the context of the times in which the action occurred. So what blows my mind now is how do they get past the whole institution of slavery? They're judging it by today's chronological vantage point, not back when it was happening. And they're, you know, when they talk about slavery, they're assuming everybody was tyrannical. I mean, not justifying it. I'm not saying it was good. I'm just saying that they make history starts today for them. So that's when they. I don't know how that one works. All right, number five. Here we go. This is like a common sense thing. Number five, concern with ethics increases with the number of means available and vice versa. So the more ways you have to do whatever it is you want to accomplish, you can choose, you know, you can technically choose the most ethical means if you have a number of them. But if you only there's only one way to get this done, well, you don't have to worry about it. If there's only one way to do it, and it would not be ethical if you didn't have to do it, then your concern with whether it's ethical or not reduces. All right, so number six, the less important the end to be desired, the more one can afford to engage in ethical evaluations of means. The more one can, yeah, okay, all right, got it. Number seven, generally, success or failure is a mighty determinant of ethics. Number eight, the morality of means depends upon whether the means is being deployed at the time of imminent defeat or imminent victory. When I was researching and studying this, this is how it hit me. This number eight, it employs the application of a survival instinct in, say, a non-life-threatening encounter. So if a person seems to be losing an engagement, any means may be used with no concerns of morality or ethics, with the idea that there was no choice. Whereas if one is finding themselves victorious, more concern of morality or ethics may be afforded to avoid criticisms or end up losing, after all, to ridicule. It's kind of, sometimes you see it in sports when one team defeats the other so badly and by so many points that criticizers will complain that it was unnecessary to accrue that many points to win and that the team could have moderated. Please. Number nine, any effective means is automatically judged by the opposition as being unethical. Any effective means is automatically judged by the opposition as being unethical. Number 10, you do what you can with what you have and you clothe it with moral garments. So that's how the people on the left look at themselves in the mirror. And that's how they sleep at night, after doing things to others where if it were done to them, they would squeal like pigs about how it's unfair or they're just disadvantaged or it's them against the entire entity. They're being bullied, et cetera, whatever. Situational ethics. But I thought it very important to kind of, you know, go through those and at least put it out there. And I'm going to do it again, not next week, but, you know, probably in a few weeks. We'll see about maybe putting this out there again. It's repetition, okay? People need to understand what all this stuff is about and where it all comes from. The book Rules for Radicals is one of the major books that that they use, because it's about how the non-powerful can get power. Ready to call in? All right. So that's, like I said, that's kind of what I wanted to and I had gotten about halfway through the things last week, but I wasn't broadcasting. So, all right. Let's see who we got here. 909. There we go. That's probably Suzette. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night. I don't know. Hello. Your line's open. Go ahead.
Hello, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Yes. You got me?
I do.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. You have a wonderful, wonderful radio voice. So I figure we can present it here. So regarding the recall, I thought for some reason that the recall petition recalled the governor, but I find out now that there's an election involved, and they call it a recall election, which Gavin Newsom is on the ballot with a few other people.
Mm-hmm.
Am I understanding that correct?
Yes. Well, I haven't seen his name on the ballot, but this is how it works as far as the signatures that have to be gathered. An extraordinary amount, you know, 1.5 million signatures up and down California that have to agree that he needs to go. And at that point, it should just be finalized if you get that many signatures, which they were over and above significantly. But that's the process of the election. But the question on the ballot is, should he be recalled, which we already agreed yes, but we have to pick yes again. And then the list of the candidates below who will replace him, he cannot run again, as far as he cannot succeed himself, basically, if everybody agrees yes or a majority agrees yes that he should be removed. So we'll know in 38 days after the election how the majority of the votes went, whether to vote no and keep him or yes to recall him, at which point they'll count the amount of votes per candidate, and the one that has a majority will take office.
Okay. See, that's what that helps a lot, my understanding. I was thinking, okay, they're going to recall the governor. Well, don't you have a lieutenant governor who would take over? You know, that's kind of how I thought it would be. Like when you impeach the president, the vice president takes over. So,
right. Well, the lieutenant governor's role in this process is overseeing the election when it's, a governor or another office of congressional member or that, then the lieutenant governor oversees the election.
The lieutenant governor run?
No.
Okay.
The way our constitution works here in California is basically if we remove him, then there'll be an election to be replaced him or her. And same with the governor or anybody else. So it's not a person moves up to the next position to, slide in until the next election. So
all right.
I guess that's
all
good.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, I just learned something just now about that, the role that the lieutenant governor is going to play is going to oversee the election. Now, what loyalty does the lieutenant governor have actually to Gavin Newsom?
That's a very good question. I would say
I'm just wondering, is he in a position to put his thumb on the scale,
Right. Well, I know that let's put the Democrat chairman here in California had endorsed Larry Elder, so she came out I guess yesterday or last night, so I got a feeling that the lieutenant governor is going to surrender too if he or she wants to consider being elected again, which that doesn't mean they will because we want them all to go, but just to win over votes.
Larry Elder's a Republican though, isn't he?
Yes, he is. That's why it was really encouraging to have our House endorse him.
Yeah, I heard a couple of interviews with him. I mean, he's definitely solid, I heard another guy today on Bongino. I can't. He was another Republican that was putting his hat in the ring.
We have a couple of them actually, and I know it's kind of tough because from San Diego. Are you speaking about the San Diego mayor that's gaining traction?
Maybe.
Okay. He's a very staunch Republican. I don't know. He says he solved the housing problem in San Diego, but his idea of solving the housing problem is building a few more shelters, and basically if you don't want to stay, you'll get run out of the city. So I don't really consider that solving it, because now you're just pushing them over to, you know, over the city lines to mm-hmm. invade somebody else's city. So I guess you could say he solved it, but...
He solved it for him.
Exactly.
He doesn't have to really deal with it now.
He's kind of priding himself and running on that right now as far as solving the homelessness San Diego.
So your guy is probably Larry Elder then, right?
Well, it's a toss-up between him and the Libertarian that we have running. He seems solid, too.
What's his name?
I'm trying to remember his name. We just saw him last night. He kind of caught me off guard.
I'm just wondering if that's the guy I heard on Bongino. That's all. I'm just thinking that maybe.
Oh, it could be. It could be. Let me see. I'm looking it up right now.
Because he's had Larry Elder on, and then he had this guy on, and I was like, huh. Levin really was impressed with Larry Elder. I know that.
Jeff Hewitt? Uh-huh.
All right. That doesn't ring a bell, so I don't know if that was exactly the guy I heard today. Anyways. All right. You got some more research to do. You got some more questions to ask and whatnot. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And we have the California Integrity Project, that it's also working to, you know, try and ensure that our election process is on the up and up. So mm-hmm. if you live in California, people should look that organization up and get involved, poll watching, poll worker, whatever, to help ensure that we have a fair election. It's California.
Why do you laugh when they say fair election in California? Why do you laugh?
Oh, because we haven't had a fair election in God knows how long. I mean, it's ridiculous. And people get a slap on the wrist. That's it. They've been caught straight, you know, flat out right in front of people as far as gathering signatures, filling in the ballots, and all this other. I mean, there's no way out. It's, you know, caught on tape or in their own words of what they've done. And they'll get a slap on the wrist of maybe community service or a small fine. But that's it. That's it. They messed with a federal election or a local election, and they get a slap on the wrist, and that's it. So there's no real incentive to stop this from happening. So that's why I laugh, because nobody wants to stop it.
That's number two. I just read it. The judgment of the ethics of means is dependent upon the political position of the person sitting in judgment. That's why they only get a slap on the wrist. If it was a Republican
mm-hmm.
caught stealing, they would throw away the key.
Oh, yeah, without question. I mean, they were already having a knip because Republicans had taken it to our local courts as far as the drop boxes that they had here. And so since the court said that they could use the drop boxes, so the GOP went ahead and made their own drop boxes, and then they didn't like that. Wait a minute, you guys can't do that.
Yeah, you guys might cheat.
Exactly.
You guys might just stuff those boxes with whatever you want and then count them. Huh. Whoa.
Yep.
Yeah. No, we can't have that. Everybody knows we're the only ones that get away with cheating.
Exactly. I mean, L.A. County was the first, district to have their ballot rolls cleared. And they had a hissy fit about that, but Judicial Watch had taken them to court because there were so many, dead people. People moved, relocated
mm-hmm.
either here or out of state, and they needed to clear those voter rolls. They hadn't been done in forever, so.
Well, there was one.
Yeah,
one of the states did that right after the 2020 election. They went and cleaned off their roll.
Yeah, that's good.
After,
they should.
After the election. They should have done it before the election.
Yeah, true. Yeah, well, that's you know, get rid of evidence or whatever. But
that's part of what it was, I think. You know, then they can't match up things. There's been so many different things that I've seen, anomalies, and I've said it many times. Anyone, no matter, even if there wasn't one, they would make one up. If it was Trump, any one of these, everybody would be shrill and doing backflips, but you know, through their hands, and just clawing their eyes. You know, that they would just be so out of it if it was Trump. Any one of these things, and there are so many. There are so many. I don't know why it's not something that at least some people should talk about. You know, some people on our side are not talking about these things. You know, it kind of starts, you know, to cause a little doubt. Why isn't this guy talking about what I've seen these other people talk about? I've seen the evidence. I've seen the stuff. You know, I've seen what they've presented. That whole Mike Lindell thing, you know, that we were talking about last couple weeks ago. Why haven't some of these other, you know, hosts picked that up and you know, started pushing it? It's unbelievable why they don't. And like I said, it causes, you know, some doubt. You know, in what we're seeing on that side, because, you know, like when I see this guy talk about it, I'm in, you know, until then, I just don't know, you know.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the media and the Democrats and their staff members talking to Republican staff members. And so you have Republicans trying to steer clear. I mean, there was testimonials going on after this last election from people, Democrats and Republicans and libertarians who were poll workers, who were observers, who were there to witness what had happened in the discrepancies. Mm-hmm. And they just wanted them investigated. That's all. They were sharing their experience and why it had to be that way. But did you hear anybody really in Washington, you know, stand up and say anything about it?
No, I mean, sure, you had the few. No, instead,
yeah,
they call that the big lie. That's the big lie. I'm sorry, but the Biden presidency is the big lie.
It really is.
And you know, every time Trump, you know, everyone says Trump, oh, you think you're going to run again? I think I won this time, is what he's been saying. When you look at all the stuff, that's what he says. I've heard him say that a couple of different times. I don't know. I think I won this time. So.
Well, you know, David, it didn't take much. I mean, even just the total tally of registered voters, the amount of votes that had come in from those registered voters for the candidates. And when you have more people than registered voters across the nation,
there's a problem.
It's just that simple.
it really is. And that is exactly, you know, my point. What do you have to say to this, Chuck Todd? More ballots were counted than there are voters. Ready, go.
That should have been the trigger right there that set off the investigations,
exactly,
to look into it.
Okay. Justice Roberts. More ballots were counted than there are voters. Ready, go.
Yeah.
You know?
The three
justices Trump put in.
They didn't. They didn't want to even deal with it, which was pathetic.
They still really don't. I mean, they don't want to be the ones that derailed the Marxist agenda. That shouldn't be.
All they had to do was just say, okay, there's enough here to look at, so go ahead with the reorder an investigation into it. They're not deciding the election. They're just ordering a thorough investigation from outside parties. That's all they had to do.
Right, but by doing that, they give it the patina of legitimacy, which they couldn't afford to do. Anything that turns up anything cannot contain. It's not a legitimate thing. That's what I'm getting at. If the Supreme Court acknowledges and orders an investigation. Well, now you've got something that, you know, it's going to be hard to argue with. If they stay out of it, whatever's found can be argued with, you know.
Mm.
Which is why they did what they did, obviously. But,
yeah.
I mean.
And then the media rang with a big lie. So now we have an insurrection and a big lie.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I know. And
I looked up the definition for insurrection. Sorry, go ahead.
No. Go ahead. I'm interested now.
Oh, I was just saying, I looked up the definition for insurrection, and basically all it is a resistance to the government if they're overreaching their powers. And that's it. It doesn't say it's a government overthrow or takeover. There's some alternative definitions with their alternative dictionaries that they have online now that insist that it is a violent takeover of the government. But when you look up Webster or some other reputable dictionary, so I'm saying own it. You know, if that's what they want to call it, own it, because we had a redress with our government, you know.
No, so, we were denied the redress. We were denied the redress of grievance.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. Which is why people showed up down there.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, you're right.
So the January, was it January 6th or January 5th? I can't keep track. Which one is it?
The 6th.
The January 6th committee that Nancy Pelosi has put together that Liz Cheney is now the vice chairman of or something, they are subpoenaing phone records of Republican elected officials. They're issuing subpoenas for phone records. The FBI has already posted their findings on the investigation on whether there was coordination and conspiracy to have the insurrection, be it with QAnon or Alex Jones or whatever. They found no groundwork for that. There was no... Everything that happened that day for whatever reason. And I still maintain that the people that were doing damage were Antifa infiltrators. They were being paid to be there. I will maintain that until you prove that it isn't. But the FBI has already issued that there was nothing to see there. But Nancy Pelosi still has to do that. Still has to do this this committee, this investigative committee, to get to the bottom of it. But now they're issuing subpoenas for phone records for elected officials. And Dan Bongino actually analyzed it, and it made sense. She's doing this whole committee in the face of the fact that the FBI already issued their findings, which was nothing, as usual. I think the reason they found nothing was because if they really dug in, they'd find FBI people were involved.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but what Nancy Pelosi is doing in the face of that is for the 2022 midterms, they need to cast doubt, they need to demean, they need to just put it out there, all these Republicans that we subpoenaed, and they can say whatever they want was in their phone records. They can't release phone records, you know what I mean? They can subpoena them, but they can't release them to the public. They can say whatever they want was in them. Oh, they said this and this and this, and it means that, you know. Oh, okay.
Well, you have Christopher Wray coming out and saying the most dangerous terrorist in our nation here is white supremacist, you know. And so when you have that, and then the left associates white supremacy with the Republican Party and Donald Trump. And so basically Republican bad racist white supremacist, so it overshadows everything that's gone wrong with the Biden administration intentionally, I might say, is my opinion. But so over the last 8 months. And so they're talking about that. And so they get their talking points from CNN and MSNBC. These white supremacists don't want this investigated because they know what really happened. They know they were doing an insurrection and all this other. And so in the meantime, inflation is out of control, and we have this Afghanistan nightmare.
And climate change.
So on and on. And climate change too. Yikes.
Yikes. The monotone yikes. That's hilarious. Climate change. Yikes. I appreciate that. Hey, so what did you think of the and by the way, thank you for listening. You were here most of the whole show, so I appreciate you listening. So, but I wanted to get your I know you commented a couple of times during the rules of means and ends. Is that the first time you've ever heard those?
No. As a matter of fact, I believe it's called the Sunshine Group or Sunrise Group. Sunrise. They have it as their part of their teachings, this organization that teaches young adults how to organize and get out there to support their causes. And they say in their, I don't know what you call it, their teachings, that they use the Saul Alinsky, tactics and handbook or whatever. And so, that I got interested in that and wanted to know more, so I looked it up. But they just think it's the greatest thing. These are the tactics we're going to use. These are the ones that work, so we're going to stick to it. And so far, when they use them, people cave, and so they continue to use it. And it's just getting more, it's just escalating more and more.
Yeah. And like I said, throughout the whole thing, you can see, you can match up events, with these tactics, and you can see all over the place. They're so all over the place, everywhere you look. It's based on this. So, all right. Well, it's good that it's not the first time you've seen those. I think it's
Lot of people, may have heard it. Our age group, are familiar with it, but the next generation down may not be as much. And so it's good to throw that out there because it is an actual playbook of tactics that have been used.
Absolutely.
And
is.
Are being used.
And it's
good that you had that.
It's openly about, it's openly evil. When the dedication in the front is lest we forget an over the shoulder acknowledgement of the very first radical who fought against the system so hard that he eventually won his own kingdom, Lucifer. he's giving a shout out to Lucifer in the at the front of the book.
And it's all about language too, the language that's used and how they manipulate that language. Like I'm hearing a lot these days of youngsters using the word goat, and the goat means you're the best. So basketball player Michael Jordan is the goat. Yeah. And the goat is usually associated with that whole, with the Luciferian.
I think that's a happy accident, but I think it's goat means greatest of all time. That's how I see that. But I don't.
Sure.
It's just the acronym.
Though.
But you're right. It's a goat. A lot of people use it.
I'm just curious. Who? Why the goat? Why? I mean, a goat. Just curious.
I don't think. To me, I mean, don't get mad at me. I think you overthought that one.
Okay. I appreciate
somebody
it.
Somebody says somebody's the greatest of all time. They just take the first letters and it spells goat. So they just shorten it to goat. That's
gotcha.
That's
Well, see, that makes sense. I like that. Okay, good. So,
I mean, it's better than them being a Satan thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm so glad.
Did I lose you? Oh. Wow. Well, your mic's still open. I don't know what happened to your connection. Don't know if you can hear me. Or if you're talking, but
I'm talking.
Oh, okay. There you go. You dropped off for a second, so I was like, Satan.
So no, I appreciate you correcting me. That's good. I like to do that for others as well. You know, if there's something up, rather than walking around looking like an idiot, you know, what is she talking about? Satan and what? Where did she get that from?
Greatest of all time. G O A T.
Yes.
Go.
Right, now I get it. Yeah,
I think that's
all
that is.
Yeah,
I don't expect anything more than that. So, but that's just me. Some people may exploit it further, but
no, I was totally on the wrong track, and I appreciate that. But hey, I'm going to let you get back to your show, so we can talk more about my vote analysis.
I only got 2 minutes left, so I appreciate you helping me with the last half hour. That's it's fantastic. It worked out perfectly, and I really appreciate your insight, your input, you know, and your contributions here. And I know G-Ski, speaking for him too, we definitely appreciate you. We appreciate everybody that listens, comes to the show live. We appreciate everybody that listens afterwards. And you know, we're just doing a thing. We're not, you know, we're not trying to be professionals. We're not trying to be, you know, super famous. We're just doing what we do. We're just having a conversation and doing what excites us. So, with
that's
that,
fantastic. We'll keep doing it.
Yeah, and you too, by the way, because you have a show. Why don't you plug that real quick?
Okay, that's Suzette Live Talk on Spreaker.com. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Fantastic. All right. And with that, we'll take it out. Thank you very much again for calling in, Suzette. And we'll take it out with, let me see, what have I got? We'll do this second show intro. All right. Have a good night.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. Thanks for joining our informative, stimulating, thought-provoking, and entertaining show. Welcome.